Voices in Time, recording life stories.
Okay, today's April 14th, 2011, and we're back again with Anne. And so we have a few stories from childhood we want to go back and pick up before we proceed down your your path.
Well, there's two of them that I thought about after I had talked to you before that I thought would be interesting for the kids to know about because of the difference in the way we live. The first one that I had forgotten about is the delivery of coal. My grandma and grandpa lived in a house that had a coal bin, and they delivered coal in a doorway at the foundation of the house. They opened the door in which they had a coal chute that they would put the coal into a coal room in the basement. And then when I would go over there, I'd watch my grandpa do what they call stoke the furnace. And the furnace, they got their heat through the coal, and my grandfather would shovel the coal in at night and morning, that I know for sure, because when I stayed all night there, I watched him, and I was very fascinated with the way he did it. There was a door in the furnace that he would open and just shovel the coal in. And I don't know whether my grandma stoked the furnace during the day or not, but I'm sure it had to be in order to heat the whole house in the really cold weather. And so that's the end of that, because it just was fascinating to me, and I thought the kids would like to know about it, because I don't think they've ever seen that done. Mm-hmm. And when we moved into Westover House, there was a coal bin or a coal room in that next to the furnace, but wasn't used because there was a newer furnace in that house. Mm-hmm. The second one I wanted to tell you about is one day during the summer, I was over at my grandmother's house, and a pickup truck drove up, and the man got out, and my grandmother went out, and there was a carts or crates of chickens, live chickens, on the back of the truck, stacked up on the back of the truck. And my grandmother went out and she picked out a chicken. And the man took the chicken to her backyard, and he took it by the head or the neck and twisted it around in the air. Just swung it around and around until the chicken's head came off. And then the chicken ran around the yard with no head, blood spurting out of the neck. And I just stood there in shock. I'd never known of anything happening like that. And she didn't warn me or what he was going to do or anything. So then she took it in to the sink and put boiling water in a big pot, put the chicken in the big pot, and defeathered it. And then she took all the insides out of the chicken. And I just stood there and I thought, oh my gosh. And I wasn't hungry at dinner time, and I did not eat chicken for at least 2 years after that.
I wondered if that would make you vegetarian or something.
probably if I was older, it would have. But anyway, that's, I would say.
And was that common for people to get fresh, truly fresh chicken like that in the city? Or?
Well, he had a full truck full, and he was going around the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I imagine so, but that's the only time that I ever had seen that done.
Wow. Oh. Okay.
Okay. And so we're back to college. So, like I said, I couldn't start nursing school until I was older, because I was only 16 when I graduated from high school. And Bill was going to Benedict in college on a football scholarship. And before he went away to school, he gave me his Rocker's Class ring. And when I went into college at St. Teresa's, we lived at home, and there was 9 of us taking the college degree course in nursing. And so we were grouped together in one class, apart from the rest of the students in in inorganic, organic chemistry, physiology, anatomy, all those kind of courses, and went into class with the other students, like in theology. And I think I had told you about that in the at the last time, because mm-hmm. I remember telling mm-hmm. you about my theology course. Mm-hmm. The college at that time was on 56 and Main, and it is now with the St. Teresa's Academy at the same location, and has since moved to 119th and Mornell. It's now called Avila College, and a lot of the younger people don't know that. They just think Avila always existed out there. Was not part of the location at 56 and Main, and it was a girls' school, no boys. Now Avila is co-ed. So that's different from before. We went there to the college for 2 years. We had to go during the summertime because this is a 5-year course condensed into 4 years. And during the summertime, we only the nurses went, and we took mainly psychology courses in something that pertained to nursing. Well, we had a lot of fun those 2 summers because one of the girls had a lot at Lake Lackawanna, and her father had a boat, and we would leave St. Teresa's and go out to Lake Lackawanna and spend our afternoons there, and spent half the time unwinding the rope from the motor on the boat, because it seemed like we were always getting it wound around the boat. But anyway, it was a fun time. And then after the second summer, in September, we moved in to St. Joseph Hospital nursing quarters. Mm-hmm. And at that time, and it's since been torn down, it was at Linwood and Prospect. It has since moved out to State Line and I-40-435. Mm-hmm. When we moved in, the first assembly we had was the head of the nursing, head of the whole nursing course or study was Sister Fabian, and she was a big gal. Some of the girls were really afraid of her, but because she was very strict. But she had the first assembly, and she told us that if we didn't want to be drafted at the end of our nursing studies, that we should quit right then, because we would probably be drafted. Nurses would probably be drafted because Korean War was going on at that time. Well, no one left, no one really. I mean, that was too far away for us to think about. We were all set there, moved in to the nursing home. The 9 of us from the college degree hooked up with, I would say there's about 30 others, between 20 and 30 other students already there. And we were the degree course. They were the diploma course. They only spent 3 years, 3 full years at the nursing quarters. They moved right in at the beginning of their studies and spent 3 years there. So we joined them in their second year. They had mainly had their studies there at the at the hospital. But we all, whenever we went on the floors or anything, we were probies first, which we wore beanies for about 6 months. And it was a big deal when we got capped, because we got our nursing cap and we got aprons over our striped uniforms that we wore as probies. We had new rules there. We had house mothers. We had three floors of nursing students in the nursing quarters. We took up the fifth, sixth, and seventh floors. The fourth floor was all nuns. The nuns lived there. The nuns ran the hospital. They had opened the hospital. There was a nun on each that ran each floor of the hospital. When we moved in, we had new rules. We had two house mothers that checked on us all the time. They came in and worked at night until everyone got in from wherever they went at night. We had to be in at 10 o'clock every night, except for two nights. We could stay out until 12:30, those two nights, or one of those nights we could take an overnight. And we had to have permission to do that from the house mothers. We had to write out a permission slip, and they had to okay it. And we had to write where we were going. Then at 10 o'clock every night, the house mothers go through the students' quarters and make sure we were there and that we were settling down for the night. We had different hours after we became students capped, or got our nursing caps and everything. We started having different hours as we did as probies. Probies, we just worked on the floor a couple, two or three mornings a week. And at that time, we were studying the different treatments, and they would have to supervise us for the different treatments. They would supervise us three times. And at that time, when we were all finished with that, we were ready to go into the floors. So when we went on the floors, we worked 7 to 3, or we had split shifts, 7 to 11 and 4 to 7, or 3 to 11 at first. And then later on, as we became closer to our senior year, they'd start putting us on night duty. And because we were usually on the floor at night duty as head nurses. It was really a different experience. It taught us responsibility and organization and meeting all the different people that we worked on. We rotated through all the different kinds of nursing, like orthopedic, surgery, surgical floors, medical floors,
pediatrics,
maternity, and maternity
like floor neonatal stuff too.
And we at that time we did a lot more on the floors than they do now. We got most of our experience on. We got a lot of experience on the floors because, the student nurses were a large part of the whole nursing people or whatever you want to call it.
Personnel. Sure.
They we were well supervised until. On the morning floor, at the morning times, but in the 3 to 11, we weren't supervised. We more by the nurses that were on the floor than by our teachers. The nurses that I was in with were, like I said, the naughty nine. We were called the naughty nine, and probably. There was reason for that. I know the first time we got in trouble was late at night. A couple of the nuns came down, came up from their floor, and we were carrying on. The nine of us were rooming together, next to each other. We're moving, rooming together on one wing, and we were carrying on trying to stuff someone into the laundry sink that was on our floor, and they came down and said, "Made us go to our rooms and go to bed." And and the difference in that time and this time, our group, the nine of us, on Halloween, everybody got dressed up, had a big Halloween party, and we went. We went as a group of a family group, shotgun wedding. And at that time, you know, that just that just wasn't talked about. Or I know we got into, we were grounded for a weekend. They thought it wasn't a proper thing to do, the nuns. And I know we drove a couple of our teachers up a tree because one of them, I'm sure she was going through menopause. Everything just set her off, or at least we did, everything we did. And she walked out on us in class. She was giving us our, usually the heads of the departments would teach us that when we got to that department. Anyway, she walked out on us one morning because during our class, because we didn't know the amount of protein in a nursing mother's milk, you know? And that was least of our what we were thinking about then. And then she was the head dietitian in the special dietitian kitchen. And when we were going through her rotation, we had to set up the trays and everything. And then one morning we were making a big, huge tray of, first of all, it was brownies on the bottom, and then it was mint icing in the middle and chocolate on top, and it was beautiful. But when we took it off the counter, a couple of the girls dropped it upside down on the floor. And, you know, different things like that. Yeah. And then when we were in on the maternity floor, that nun was teaching us, and at the end, during that time, we had to put on a home delivery. And usually, I guess the other classes were very serious, and when they did that, well, ours turned out to be a comedy. I was a patient. My friend Bev was the doctor, and then there were neighbors there, and for the other, you know, the other nine, and we just put on a real show. And I thought that she would have the opposite reaction than she did. But she got up in the middle of it, called another nun in. I thought, oh my gosh, we are really in trouble, because we were really acting silly. You know, acting like I was in pain, you know, screaming, and Bev walks in, "Well, let's see what's going on here," you know, and then the neighbors are, "Oh, do something for her, do something," you know. We were hamming it up. It was not medical at all. It was a stage show. And I looked down at those two nuns, and they were doubled over in laughter. And after it was all over with, she never chastised us. She just, you know, didn't say a word about it. But we had a great time. And the rules we had to live under, besides the hours, were that we had to have our hair above our collars. We could wear no jewelry, no perfume, no makeup, and or nail polish while we were on the floors.
Did you have a favorite specialty or focus that, you know, when you were rotating around, did
yes.
you have a favorite?
I loved pediatrics. When I'd visit my grandma, there was a family that lived on her street, and it was a big family, and I would always go up there and be part of their family when I was there at my grandma's. And I loved the fun they had, the games they played, and just the interaction in the whole family. And after that, I said, when I grow up, I'm going to have a big family. And I'd always loved to babysit when I got older, high school age. We only made 25 cents a quarter an hour. I think I had told you that. And then when I got to nursing, my favorite was pediatrics. And so my goal was to work on pediatrics after I got out of nursing mm-hmm. school. We had mass every day because the nuns were there. We had a chapel, and a few of us went to mass when we could. The only time I couldn't go to mass was when we were going through surgery rotation, because we started earlier. We started at 6 o'clock, and it was because we had to wipe down all the surgery rooms and everything. And that was the most, surgery was the thing that put the most pressure on us. And I had always said that I hoped that my children did not meet their future mate as early as I did, because I had a lot of pressure at different times in going through nursing. And Bill gave me his ring before we started at first year of college. And then his friend saw me walking home with a guy who had asked me if he could walk me home from a Rockers basketball game, because he knew I was going to be walking home by myself. And so Leo saw us walking home together. He called Bill at school. Bill came home. I don't ever remember him giving me the opportunity to explain. It wasn't a date. And he took the ring back. And so, but we dated off and on. And our sophomore year, we were dating pretty good. And he had a friend at school who wanted to break up with his girlfriend. So Bill told him how to do it, what to say. So he came home, it was the end of our sophomore year. He came home, and instead of Bill's friend breaking up, Bill broke up with me, said everything to me what he had told the friend to say. And then he told me that it was too early. We'd have to date seriously, because it was either quit school and get married soon or break up. So he actually, it wasn't the end of our sophomore year. It was right before I went into surgery. And I was all broken up from that, from Bill breaking up with me and the pressure from surgery. But got through it. I love surgery, finally, after the first few times. Mm-hmm. We would start out with the cataracts and then work up like the appendix and work up to the hard surgeries, or the big surgeries. Mm-hmm. And as students, we would be scrub nurse to begin with, and then we would actually give the instruments to the doctor. Mm-hmm. And so I love that. By the end of time I got out of there, I love surgery. And that probably, I was thinking about that besides pediatrics. one of the things that we did was go to General Hospital, which is now Truman, and we would go through the clinics there. We would rotate through the clinics there. And that was very interesting because we met a different kind of people than we had at St. Joseph. And it was just interesting. And because we were Catholics from a Catholic school, we weren't allowed to assist doctors with anything that had to do with contraceptives or abortion. Also, another interesting thing, the seniors rotated through their psychiatric studies, and we went to St. Louis State Hospital for 3 months of our senior year. And it was like being set free from all the rules and everything. So we had fun at St. Louis. And also the psychiatric part was very different. And I had a lot of different experiences with there. And we were there in the summer of 54, our rotation was. And I was with my best friend, Bev Emer. It was now Bev Emer. She was Bev Humphrey then. And we roomed together there. It was the summer of 54, and it was the hottest summer on record. It went up to 112 degrees, no air conditioning in the nurses' quarters. So we spent a lot of time outside, and I worked with a girl by the name of Shirley Stapleton. She was in our rotation, and we were working at night in the female hospital, and it was just awful, the heat. And so we decided one morning, instead of sleeping in the nurses' quarters, to go to the swimming pool close by. And we both got really bad sunburns. I had to wear this starchy uniform that night, overnight. And she had to go in the hospital and had to have IV fluids. That was one thing that happened there. Another thing that I remember, never have forgotten, was when they had drama, what they called drama therapy. Some of the patients would come in and they would work out their troubles through drama therapy. They'd have to act them out. And this one girl, when I went through my rotation there, this one girl that worked in the kitchen was a pet of one of the doctors, and he would sign her out and take her home for the weekends. Mm. And some of the other patients were really jealous of her. And so this girl got into an argument with another patient during the time she was acting out her problem. And the other girl said, I'm gonna tell all the doctors and nurses that you pick your nose and put it in their food. She said, I'm gonna tell them what you do, that you do that. And I thought, oh my gosh, because she was working in the nurses and doctors' kitchens, not in the kitchen for the whole hospital. And for the rest of that time, I never ate anything, any casserole or oatmeal or anything like that. I always ate my cereal out of the box. And ate a lot of pizza across the street, so I gained weight while I was there. Anyway, that was really interesting. That whole summer was very interesting. When I first got there, I thought, oh, these people are humans just like me. And, you know, they weren't treated at a state hospital like they would be in other hospitals. Mm-hmm. And we would take some of them out at night to, like, they would give us tickets for the municipal park stage, and we would take them out. And we couple of times we had to chase them because they would try to escape. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the whole atmosphere, the whole thing was just completely different. Mm-hmm. And I did actually like that. By the time I came back from St. Louis, and when we first got there, I thought St. Louis is the dirtiest city I'd ever seen. When we came back, I cried because I love St. Louis, which is good. I have a daughter-in-law from there. when we were at the end of our junior year, that was the summer. Yeah, that was the summer we went. I told you it was 54. Mm-hmm. So we came back and finished up during the year of 55. During February of that year, our Sister Fabian had an assembly, and she said, we're gonna have a sweetheart dance in February, and was one of the few times that we had dances at the nurses' quarters. And in fact, it was the only time during that year that we had a dance. And she said, we're going to pick a queen for that dance. And so she explained about voting for the queen, and they picked three girls by vote to run for queen. And I happened to be one of them. I don't know why, but I happened to be one of them. And another one was a girl I had gone through high school and through. She was also one of the naughty nine. And she lived on, there was two double rooms in the whole nursing quarters. And my friend Bev and I lived in one. We had asked for a room together, and Bernice was on the freshman floor, so they with her friend Mary Lou, and so they knew all the freshmen. I didn't really know any of the freshmen, so I thought, Bernice is going to get it, you know, because she knows all the freshmen. The whole school is going to vote, and so we had a campaign and had a vote. And the third girl was put out because Bernice and I had the same votes. So we had a tie. And so we had to have another election. Well, during that one day, I went down to see her for some reason on the fifth floor. I walked in, and there was Mary Lou. She had been homecoming queen for Rockers, mm-hmm. at Rockers, trying on her crown on Bernice's head. And so I thought, well, you know, okay. They think what I think. So anyway.
And how big was, I know there's the nine girls, but how big was the school? How many?
The school itself, I would say, was about 150 to 200. Okay. If that, okay. Maybe a hundred, more like 100 to 150.
Okay.
I don't think I ever knew how many of it. There were three full floors of us, so whatever.
Okay.
I really don't know. Anyway, Bill and I were broken up. I needed a date for the dance, and I was also working night duty. So I probably wouldn't have gone to the dance at all if I wasn't up for queen, and it wouldn't be nice if I didn't show up. So Bev got me a date, or one of the girls got me a blind date. I'd never seen the guy before. He was a friend of another guy that was coming in, who was going to the dance with one of the girls. So he was very nice, but I felt bad for him because he didn't know I was up for queen. They hadn't been told. And I turned out to be, I was announced as the queen of the dance. Well, this guy, he had to get up in front of everybody, and he was sort of shy. And then after that, after I was crowned queen, I had to leave the dance, go put my uniform. And they let me stay. I was supposed to go on at 11 o'clock, and they let me have an hour leeway. The nurse that worked 3:11 said she would work till midnight for me. Well, I left the dance, took my bouquet up to the chapel, got a vase, put my bouquet in, put it in front of Mary, and then knelt down and said a prayer. Mary, here you are. Here's a bouquet for you. And then I went up, changed my uniform, came back, told the guy goodbye, thanks for coming, and went on floor duty.
Who was the guy? Did you ever see him again after that?
Well, actually, he asked me out a few more times, and I always made excuse that because I was always going, you know, doing something else, going on floor duty. As a senior, we were pretty, you know, pretty busy and working night duty. We wanted to sleep during the day. And then it so happened that the week before I got married, I got a note from him through the mail, and I hadn't seen him for, you know, just talked to him on the phone for a long time. And he just asked me if he had a chance, you know. So I just wrote him back and said, I'm getting married, you know. Well, then Easter of that year, was Good Friday of Easter of that year, I went to church, and Bill came to church, and then came to my house afterwards, and we talked and everything, and he asked me about going back together, and I said, well, if you treat me better than you treated me before, because I really knew that I loved him. I was head over in heels with him, in love with him from the very first. And my mother, you know, was against it. Not against it, but she thought I could find boys with manners. And when we were sitting there talking, I had a bouquet on the mantle from, you know, another boy. Mm-hmm. And but I just knew, you know, I knew that Bill was the one for me. And I, to this day, I am sure that God was behind all this, because we are completely opposites. We're completely opposites. And I just felt really drawn to him. And I do believe in chemistry. So anyway, we started dating again. And I went up to his graduation dinner at St. Benedict's, and when I graduated from St. Joseph's, I started working at the last of that summer at Menorah, because I could walk there, I could go to Mass at St. Francis on the way to work. And they were pretty upset with me at St. Joseph because I didn't continue on there. But I would have had to take the bus and back and forth every day, and it was too far from my house. And so I went to work on pediatrics at Menorah. And in October of the year, and Bill came home, went to work for his dad's company. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fall of 55, summer and fall, last of the summer.
Okay.
Bill went to work for his father that summer, because I continued with our nursing until the end of the summer. Then I went to work with Menorah. And in the fall, Bill's first cousin, Kenny Frame, he had gone in to the Navy, and he was in the Navy Air Force. And he came back to Kansas City and got married to this girl he had gone with for a couple of years. One of the things that really stands out that happened with Bill and me, was that Bev and I, on the day of their wedding, we had been invited to the wedding. Bill was in the wedding, Bev and I worked 7 to 3, so we were late to the reception because we had to go home, change out of our uniforms. And when we walked into the reception, it was Hillcrest Country Club, some girl came up to me and she said, "Oh, Ann, you better watch Bill. It's this Kenny's cousin from out of town, from Chicago, is really after him and he loves it." So I said hi to him or something, and you know, he was really aloof. So I got upset and I went into the restroom, and somebody came in and said, "Ann, Bill wants you to come out." I said, "No, I'm not coming out." And I just acted like a little kid, you know. And so Bill finally ended up walking into the girls' restroom and pulling me out of there. And we went out to the parking lot, and we weren't the last ones to leave. Anyway, so we started talking about, you know, getting just off and on about getting married. And Christmas Eve, my folks went over to my aunt's, and Bill came over on Christmas Eve, and he gave me and he had talked to my dad, asked me to marry him, and I said yes. And he says, "This is the only time I'm going to give you this ring." So anyway, we talked about the war, and he had a deferment from the draft of going through college. But now that he was out of college, he was ripe, ready to be drafted. So he decided to join, like his cousin did, to sign up for the Navy Air Force, for the Navy. And he went through all the tests, everything. And he was going to go in for training for 3 months, come out as a second lieutenant, and be a pilot. And so he would be finished in August, that next August, and he would come back and we'd get married and then I'd go with him. That was our plans. Well, his dad was against it. He called me and he said, "What do you think about him going into the service?" And I said, "Well, it's something he wants to do, just to stay out of the Army." And I said, it's his decision to make. So I'm just letting him make that decision. And then Bill talked to a friend of his who talked to someone, and he said, "It's not for a married man, because you're going off for 6 months at a time and leaving her there, you know, by herself in a strange place." And, And so Bill came over and told me he had decided not to go in. Mm-hmm. And he went down the day before he was supposed to be sworn in and told him he wasn't going to do it. Mm-hmm. And the guy at the Navy recruitment said, you know, was really upset. He says, we spent all this money on your test, psychological test, everything. And Bill says, well, I'm not going in. So we moved the wedding back from August to July 14th.
Mm-hmm. What did he do then? When he changed his mind, then did he get drafted then, or what?
Well, we got married after we got married.
In July.
That put him back.
Okay.
I don't know what they called him, one place. Mm-hmm. And then I got pregnant the month after we got married, mm-hmm. and that put him back. So by the time the Korean War was over, he had been deferred each time because of marriage, mm-hmm. child, you know.
Well, so do you want to talk about the wedding then? Where do you feel like going next?
The wedding, was at St. Francis, my parish church. It was a new church, fairly new church, you know, bigger church than the one I grew up with. And it was shaped like a fish, and so we called it Holy Mackerel House of Cod. And our wedding, the day of our wedding was 98 degrees at 9 o'clock in the morning. We were married at 9 a.m. and one of the altar boys fainted during the wedding, and it was hot. Mm-hmm. And then after the wedding, we went to Milliman's on the Plaza, which is now Plaza 3, mm-hmm. had a breakfast, then went back to my house and went back to Milliman's at 2 o'clock for a reception. Mm-hmm. We went, after the reception, we had hidden the car because at Twin Oaks Garage, because we knew they were going to be after us. And so we took off in his dad's convertible to Twin Oaks, and we left early as soon as I threw the bouquet. We just turned around and ran out before everybody expected us to, because we knew we were going to be in trouble if we didn't do it that way. So we went to Twin Oaks, traded cars. We had Bill's car was packed. Has packed with what we wanted to take with us. Went to my grandmother's house, changed clothes. I left my wedding dress there. Then we went down to the President Hotel. Mm. And Bill had gone down there the week before, made arrangements with bellhop, or whatever you call them, to have flowers and champagne in the room. When we got to the room, no flowers, no champagne, and we had single beds. And a nightmare. And we were both virgins when we got married.
So the twin beds.
So the twin beds. You know, everything was a little strange. I remember when Bill was going away to Benedictine, the thing that we did was watch a cowboy movie before he would come to my house, and we had watched, I forget the name of it, it was real popular at that time. And then when that was over with, we knew we had to leave. Mm-hmm. Well, Bill ordered some champagne in then, mm-hmm. and I remember sitting down on the floor, watching that movie, and we had drinking the champagne, And it was early. We had reservations for dinner across the street. Well, after drinking the bottle of champagne, we missed our dinner. And the next morning, we went to church at the cathedral. And I remember how embarrassed both of us were, because one of the ushers was Bill's old schoolmate. You know, it was just strange, or, you know, it was different being together. And mm-hmm. So we checked out of the hotel, drove to, we were going to go to Minnesota for our honeymoon. Minnesota was what we chose, because we would have gone to Colorado, but at that time Hoda's company had warehouses in Denver and Albuquerque and or New Orleans. So we were going to go to Denver to work. He was going to work in Denver. And so we decided that to go to Minnesota because for our honeymoon, because his doctor said they had gone to Gull Lake in Minnesota at this wonderful place. Well, we stayed all night the second night in Iowa on the way to Gull Lake. Then we went up there, checked in. It was entirely different than we had imagined. It was a family, you know, oriented, and it had it was older, and we had a cabin. They put us in a cabin that was like, had one chair in it, the bed, and a dresser, and a bathroom. That was a real tiny little thing. And I remember how I felt going in there. The bed just loomed out at me. Then I closed the door and it said, "Fuck you," on the back, carved into the back of the door. So I thought, oh my gosh, here we are. So anyway, we were supposed to be there for a week, and it seemed awfully long to me for some reason.
So you did stay for the week.
We
you
did didn't stay go for the else. Week. Okay. We didn't go anyplace else. Okay. And one thing that was different, there was a seaplane that came in, and Bill made arrangements for us to go up in the seaplane. And that was the first time I had ever been up in a plane. Mm-hmm. And so we just took a tour over the area and came back. Mm-hmm. And anyway, the day we were supposed to come home, I found out that I was married to a business also, because his dad called from Kansas City, said the Iowa salesman had quit. Instead of going to Denver, we were to go through Des Moines, find an apartment to live, or a place to live in, because that he was going to cover Iowa as a salesman until they found someone to replace him. Mm. So we ended up with an apartment on the edge of town that had been a farm, originally had been a farm, and the farmhouse was divided into, it was square, it was divided into four tiny apartments. Mm-hmm. We rented an apartment that had the bed in the living room, and then it had a kitchen and a bathtub with no shower in the bathroom. And we could look out the window, and on the other side of the land was a drive-in theater, and we could watch the movie but not hear it.
Back to your silent movies.
So during that time, we were there 5 months. Okay. During that time, the things that stand out to me was, I would go with Bill to all the towns and calling when he called them plumbers. And I would sit in the car and I wrote out all my thank you notes. And then a month after we got married, I missed my period. And I knew that I might be pregnant. And Bill, and it's a good thing I was, because Bill had asked me if I was craving strawberries about 2 weeks after we got married. Because we both had talked about wanting a big family. We both wanted a big family and talked about having 12 kids. And so we knew what we wanted. And we're happy, very happy that we got pregnant right away. And but I was traveling with him, and I also had morning sickness, morning, noon, and night. And one day we were going across a bridge, and it had gotten cool, and we had the heater on and wool clothes on, and he couldn't stop in time to let me out. And I threw up all over the dashboard. And Bill says, "That's it, you're staying at home." And I wanted to stay at home because I was getting car sick. And but before that, we were staying at the different hotels, and he stayed at the crummiest hotels you could imagine. And he was trying to save on expenses. And so when I started traveling with him, I was sleeping in the same places. And I wanted to tell him I was pregnant. I had picked a certain night that I wanted to tell him. And that night, we had, the windows were up, we had flies in the room, we had a light hanging down from the ceiling with nothing. I mean, it was just plain old light bulb there. And I thought, I am not going to tell him in this kind of place, you know. So the next night we stayed at a nicer, much, much nicer hotel. And so after we got in bed, I said, Bill, I'm pretty sure, told him I was pretty sure I was pregnant. Oh my gosh. He was the happiest guy on God's green earth. He got up out of bed and he walked back and forth. And said, "I'm going to be a father. I'm going to be a father." You know, and he was so happy, and I was happy. We were just, you know, both really happy about it. Mm-hmm. And then when I had to stay home, I could not keep anything down. Mm-hmm. I lost 7 pounds because I had a thing for pink grapefruit, and all I ate during those for 3 months was pink grapefruit. And Bill would go out on Monday morning and come home on Monday night and bring me 5 white shirts that had to be ironed and starched. And I would go downstairs on Saturday morning, and they had a wringer washer, one of those old wringer washers in the basement. And when it would rotate, it had a short cord on it, it would rotate toward the drain. So I'd have to keep pushing it back from the drain, and I'd always pop the wringer, and it hit me right in the stomach. And then after I got them all up on a line, a rope line in the basement, the little kid that lived upstairs would come down and run back and forth under the white shirts. And I thought, oh no. And I finally told him, just go back home. You know, it was really, really, really bad. And then I take the white shirts back with him. And while he was gone, I was sick. Mm-hmm. And I spent a lot of time in bed. And I made friends with a girl downstairs. And we would get together, and she'd take me out with her because I didn't have a car once in a while. And then I had to walk a half a mile to get our mail and walk back, because it was at the down on the road. Mm-hmm. And I just read, and then when Bill would come home, I would be so excited, mm-hmm. could hardly wait for him to get home. And he'd walk in the door and was like, I knew who did this to me. I get sicker than, I mean, you know, it's just awful. Mm-hmm. And then we were the first ones, one of the first ones in our group to get married. Mm-hmm. And so we were going home a lot of weekends to parties. And and we'd hit Cameron, Missouri, mm-hmm. and hit this turn in the road. I'd be laying in the back seat. For some reason, I would get sick right at the same place on the way home. And we come home, stay with my mom and dad. But before we left on Sundays, we'd go over to Bill's mom and dad's for breakfast on Sunday mornings. And we'd leave to go back from there. And one morning, I told us, she was fixing eggs, and I said, Bill, I can't look at eggs. You know, I can't look at eggs. So when I told her that morning, I wasn't hungry. I didn't want breakfast. Mm-hmm. And she said something about, are you sick or something? And Bill says, no, she just doesn't like your cooking. Oh. I said, oh, Bill, you know, he was always doing things to me like that. Anyway.
And remind us how old you are at this point.
I am 21 years old.
Okay.
Bill's 21 years old. I'm two months to the day older than he is.
Okay.
And so.
And what was the prenatal care like? I mean, were you seeing a doctor in Iowa?
No, okay. I was seeing a doctor in Kansas City.
Okay.
And he was a resident at St. Joseph's Hospital while we were in training. And all the girls loved him. The nuns loved him. Mm-hmm. And when he went into his own practice, he opened up a place on 31st, close to Broadway. And a lot of the students went to him. Mm-hmm. And he was a general practitioner. And that's who I started going to. I want to go back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
When we were seniors, mm-hmm. and Bev Amer, my best friend, who I roomed with and ran around with, they called us the Gold Dust Twins. And we fixed her up with Leo Amer, who was Bill's friend, who was the one that called him, mm-hmm. earlier. Bill fixed him up to the prom with Bev, and we thought, she's not the kind of girl that he dates or anything, but Bill says they can, he go to the prom together, and then, so anyway, Leo and Bev started dating, so my best friend started dating Bill's good friend, and we started double dating after that. And when I got my engagement ring on Christmas night, mm-hmm. I didn't finish that story either. When I got my ring on Christmas Eve, mm-hmm. We went to midnight mass, mm-hmm. that night, and met Bill's cousin Kenny and went with him and Ann, his wife, to Bill's aunt's house for breakfast, mm-hmm. after midnight mass. Mm-hmm. Then after midnight mass, after breakfast, we got home. Bill brought me home at 5:00. I changed to my uniform and was on duty by 7:00 with my new ring on my hand. I was working by myself because it was Christmas Day, and there weren't very many patients. And about 10:00 that morning, 10:30 that morning, a florist came in with a big box of a dozen red roses and with a note from Bill. It was so sweet, so nice. I just felt so loved. Mm-hmm. And I called after I got off duty at 3. He picked me up, and I called my best friend, Bev, and I said, I got an engagement ring last night. And she said, well, I did too. So they were in our wedding in July, and we were, I was her maid of honor. She was my maid of honor, and then I was her maid of honor in November.
Okay.
And and a month and a half before they got married, he got noticed from, he got a notice from the Army that he was going to have to go into basic training 3 days after their wedding date. So they had 3 days together, and I not only got pregnant the month after I got married, but she got married, she got pregnant, I guess it was 5 days after they were, he was going, after their wedding, he was going to service. They went to St. Louis for 3 days. Well, she got pregnant during that time. So we were both pregnant at the same time. And she went, so she went with him. And she, I was going to Dr. Cooper. And then when she came back from the service to a year later, she started going to Dr. Cooper also. But during the time she was gone, I didn't have. I was, and we moved back from Iowa our 5 months and bought our first house on 72nd and Cherokee in the village. And when we it was around Christmas time, and all our friends came over right after we moved in, and we had bought, Bill came home with this straggly tree that we decorated. It was our first tree. And during the party we had at New Year's, everybody sat there and made fun of that tree. So we just took it down and put it in the fireplace during our party. Everybody took the ornaments off. We threw it in the fireplace and burned it.
And why did they call you two the, what was your nickname?
Gold Dust Twins. Because we were always together.
Okay. But Gold Dust was...
I don't know. There was...
What's that referencing?
There was... it referenced a... I think there was a movie at that time or something that... About Gold Dust Twins, because they were very close.
Okay.
during the time she was gone, I just, we moved in to Cherokee, like I said, and we were only there for 3 years. I moved in with my first one, moved out when I was pregnant with my fourth one. We were only there 3 years.
<You're
moving past. laughs> But anyway, Bev was getting pregnant too every year, and it was so funny because when I got pregnant with my fourth, we had moved into the house on Manor Road, 94th and Manor Road. And Bev and Leo had come home from the service, and they had been living in Meadow Lake. And we get together on Friday nights, and we, with two other couples, and it was usually at our house, because at first, and then when Bev and Leo came home, we started going back and forth. And it ended up that we were at Bev and Leo's house on this one Friday night. And Bill and I were early, and because we usually put our kids down in each other's house. And we each had three kids. All under the age of three. by this time. So we had six between us, all under the age of three. And we had put the kids down, and Leo and Belle were in the kitchen talking, and Bev and I were sitting in the living room, and we looked at each other, and without saying a word, I said, "No." And she said, "Yes." We were both pregnant at the same time. So at the at the end of July, Jan was born. Okay. And they just happened to be over at our house on this Friday night. And we were drinking then, you know, because they didn't talk about not smoking or drinking or anything like that. Well, they left at midnight with their kids. And at 5 a.m., Leo called and said, "Well, we just had our fourth." I said, "Oh my gosh." I said, "Well, tell Beth to move over because I'm coming in." I didn't have mine on the next day. I was always in labor for 2 days. It was bad. I mean, I would go to the store. I was doing everything while I was in labor. And I remember one night we went to a movie, and I came back home and went to bed and then got up. And, the whole time I was in labor. And I'll tell you about another time later. But anyway, so I went in the next day, and we roomed together, and we knew all the nurses, you know, and it was just, we had a good time, except for Leo had lost his job a couple of weeks earlier, and that was put a damper on the whole thing. But anyway, when the babies were baptized, I was her
godmother.
Mm-hmm. And Terry was her my goddaughter's name, Terry Eimer. And now we are really close. We had gone through a lot of years there where we weren't, but we are really close because we're in the same Carmelite group. So she's my Carmelite sister besides my goddaughter. I have a story that I could wrap up that would fit here.
Okay.
Bev had a limousine for it was an old limousine that we drove around town in. I didn't. And when we were pregnant, we had these six kids in the car. We'd pile all six in the car, and she would go in to the doctor while I stayed out in the limo with the kids, and then she'd come out, and I would go in. Well, she wasn't really happy about getting pregnant every year, and they didn't really want a big family like we did. And so I was out in the car with the kids, and she went in to the doctor one day, and she didn't come out. And I was playing Simon Says with the kids in the car, and we were in there for so long, I finally had them picking their nose, you know. And she finally came out, and I said, "What happened to you?" And she says, "Well, Cooper, who was our doctor and real close to us because we went through training together, you know, he was joking, and I didn't realize it. When he was listening through the stethoscope for the baby's heartbeat, he said, I hear two of them in there." And she fainted. He was just teasing her, and she fainted. So when she came out, I said, I couldn't believe what had happened, and she couldn't either.
But it wasn't twins.
It wasn't twins. Okay. Everybody used to ask me if I had twins when I mm-hmm. first, you know, went after a while mm-hmm. because we had so many kids. And I said, nope, when they started coming two at a time, I was going to quit. And I always said that when I get to heaven, St. Peter is going to ask me for a urine specimen because I gave them out for so long. And when we got married, all Bill's family would say, may all your troubles be little ones. And I didn't realize what kind of troubles they meant. So.
This has been a Voices in Time production. To learn more, call 913-831-0848.